our 10-minute speaker is Gary P. from San Diego.
My name is Gary. I'm an alcoholic. If most of you are wondering why I wear sunglasses at meetings, it's because these are my prescription glasses. I lost my clear ones. So it's not to look cool. It's just so I can see everybody. Now I'm seeing 3 and 4 and 5 of you, but that's pretty good. Anyway, I don't know. What do you want to hear tonight? I mean, you want to hear a little bit about where I came from or what's going on in my life today? All right. All right. We'll talk about sobriety, Bill. But I got to tell you a little bit about where I came from, because all the alcoholic problems I ever had came from a valley over there over the mountain called Santee. And I was raised in a, over off of Big Rock, where the police were scared to go down there because they didn't have any streetlights and no sidewalks, and it was pretty dangerous, I guess. I don't know. I just grew up in a family. I come from a family of 4 brothers and a sister, and it was pretty crazy in our house growing up. You know, my dad would always get mad at my mother if my mom didn't have enough beer for the boys when family night came, and it was like Wednesday night. We were watching Looney Tunes, and that's what we did for an hour, and here we are 11 and 12 drinking Coors, and that's the way I grew up. I mean, what dad would teach you how to read the racing form at 9 and 10 and then not let you play until you picked out winning horses down to Agua Caliente and then feed you beer? You know, I mean, I grew up in a gambling house, a drinking house. It was just crazy, and I thought everybody kind of had that lifestyle. I mean, when I was 9 and 10, 11, you know, I was outside running the streets at 8, 9 o'clock at night. I couldn't figure out why anybody else wasn't around me. Well, shoot, they were at home doing their homework, cleaning their rooms. Undisciplined life for me. I was like a, you know, James Dean, a rebel, and I never grew out of that. It took me a long time. Now, when you take that personality and you get later on in life and you try to deal with other people at the adulthood level thinking that way, you're not going to be liked very much. And that's how I wrote this book called How to Alienate Yourself and Create Enemies. I mean, it was just one of those books. I didn't mean to. I've been arrested twice, and I never forget this one scene in the courthouse. You know, it was pretty wild. This guy was getting 15 years sentence, and he was crying like a baby. And he's begging the judge, I can't do 15 years. And the judge said, well, then do all you can. You know? That's what I got to do, is tell him the same thing, you know? But that didn't work. So it was pretty crazy. And I didn't know any different. I hung around the bikers out in East County and was riding scooters, hair down on my shoulders, you know, smoking dope and taking LSD trips and all of that. And this one LSD trip we took, I dropped this orange sunshine. Does anybody remember this orange sunshine thing? The older guys do. Yeah, $5 a hit, you know, and I took that stuff, and my friends dragged me out to this Halloween party out in Alpine, and I didn't know anything, nothing, and they left me there. Well, everybody's dressed in costumes, right? And had a big fireplace going, and they're all wearing this angel and devil stuff, jumping around, and I thought, shoot, I was in hell. And it was just a tough journey, so that's just the way I kind of grew up, and I didn't know anything else. I've never worked for anybody my entire life. You know, the military tried to grab me once, and they drafted us, and there was about 200 of us that were going to Fort Ord, and I was the only one out of 200 that didn't go. And that was pretty astonishing. So I ended up in Berkeley carrying signs and all that stuff. But I traveled all the United States, all over the place, and my brother and I had a Scooby-Doo van, you know, and we drove around, and a lot of times we'd end up in the same city twice in the same week and didn't know where we were at. So my mind was always searching for something that could give me some happiness and joy. And when I came into the rooms with Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't understand anything going on other than the fact that, you know, I knew something had to change. This was the very first meeting I went to, and I walked around with my hands in my pocket like I'm doing now, thinking somebody's going to get some money out of my pocket or something, you know. And that's, I was a little bit scared because I looked around at all these people here, and they were real friendly. Hi, how you doing? With their hands out. And I was going, wait a minute. This ain't for Gary, you know. This is something different. So I got in here, actually, you know, I was 12-step by a good friend, and I thought I was going to rebuild this beautiful relationship that we both had, you know. And that turned into a disaster, and it wasn't the truth because, you know, God put her in my life to get me sober, and I'm just grateful forever for her. So I wanted to mention that. Anyway, the first thing that they did when they told me I got in here, I got this sponsor, and he gave me this big book called Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a map book, about 2 inches thick, and had all these pages in there, and it had third and fourth grade writing, and I didn't understand any of the language. But he made a profound statement to me. He said, we're going to read this book, and when we're done, you'll be able to go to a meeting and distinguish between the BS and the truth. So I became a true seeker. I wanted to fix me. I wanted to know what was going on with me. Now, if you're in here for the first time and you're trying to figure out why you can't stop drinking, you know, the book's really clear. It says it right in the agnostic chapter. You have a lack of power. You know, I didn't have any power to stop this drinking. I didn't know where I was going to get it. But I read the next sentence and said, well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that could solve your problem. And I said, whoa, maybe I should read this thing. So I started reading it again and again and again. And I go to meetings and I start pontificating page numbers and reading it out of the book. And sometimes it's not a proper message, but it's the only message I know how to give. I could talk about drunk along stories for hours, but, you know, for me, I'm always trying to give the message out to somebody that's brand new, trying to figure out what's really going on. Why can't I stop this drinking that's causing all the problems? And it's real clear on 27 of the big book. It says, you know, we have this unwillingness to change our emotional displacement, which is the old ideas, attitudes, and emotions that govern our life from the past. We have an unwillingness to change that. Well, until that was done in Gary's mind, man, I didn't have that cloud lifted, that fog. You know, I go, whoa, I'm not the axis, and nobody in the whole world doesn't revolve around me. You know, we're all human beings, and I got to learn how to interact and act normal. And I didn't know anything about any of that stuff. But on step three, it's real profound. It told me that if I chose the God of my own understanding, I could get some freedom. So I had the religious God. I remember the first time. And if you're brand new and you're going to hear this word God in here, you'll probably get turned off by it a little bit. Just hang around long enough, because it turned me off too. Because I thought, man, the flying nun was going to come in here and smack me. You know, and I just remember the scenes from the Catholic churches. No offense, but, you know, I was like the scene out of the Blues Brothers with the 36-yard ruler getting smacked around. And I thought, no, I don't want any part of that, you know. But once I had this God of my own understanding that they talk about, that changed everything. Now I didn't have to feel guilty about what I've done or what I haven't. I had this forgiving God. And I just wanted to just fix it. I didn't know what was going on up here. See, I had 8 dry years one time when I was married for 26 years. And I was a head usher at a church, and I thought I had this thing licked. But then one of my character defects, you know, the stuff that we don't want to face, came out. And it took me back out for another 12 years, and then I lost anything that was love that God gave me. So I know what it's like to lose things, but you don't have to lose everything. See, you can keep it as long as you follow what that your sponsor is trying to tell you and what the book suggests. To me, it said, where I said to pray, I prayed. Where I said to write, I wrote. Oh, okay. And I started looking at that inventory on 4, and I said, whoa, man, this is dangerous. You know, my first sponsor says, well, let me ask you a question, Gary. It took me 4 months to do step 4, and he says, is this normal behavior that you're writing down? And I said, probably not. He goes, good. I had a unique thing. You know, if you're in here and you don't have anybody to work with, you're going to probably have to get a sponsor eventually, because that took me 3 or 4 months. And my good buddy over here sitting here says, you need a sponsor. So he suggested I go get this sponsor. He's a great guy. And I asked him one time, I was trying to rebuild this relationship, and he was trying to give me relationship advice. And I said, I got a question for you before you go any further. And he says, yeah, what's that? I said, how many times have you been married? He goes, 12. And I said, I don't want to know what you have. Stand back. I don't want to catch it. I don't want to catch it. So but he helped me out a lot, you know. He taught me how to read the book. He was a great friend, and we're still great friends. And then the next time I got another sponsor. See, the first year and a half, 18 months, it took 2 sponsors and about 3 counselors to try to settle me down. And finally, I got this other sponsor. He had 30 years sobriety, and I thought, oh, this is good, man. You know, he's got a lot of solid sobriety. So I hooked up to him, and he worked with me for a while, and he took a 30-year token at a meeting, and he decided he was too well, and he took a sabbatical for 6 months, and he finally ended up dead at county jail. So my sponsor passed away. I said, now I got to get another one. So I'm searching around for a month and a half, and I get another one. Great guy, 26 years. And he was a race car driver, and he was working on his truck in his driveway, and the thing came off the jacks or something and rolled over him, and he went to the hospital for 4 weeks in a coma, and then he passed away. So it doesn't mean that all your sponsors are going to pass away. It's just in my case they did. I didn't know if it was me or not. So I asked this big group at a big men's meeting, and I said, which one of you want to be my sponsor? They all got scared and shy, you know. They didn't want anything to do with me. So I finally hooked up to this guy, and he's one of the world's top underwater cave divers, and he's really, really good, and we're getting along pretty good. He leaves me alone, but he always comes back to telling me how to live my life according to the 12 steps, because that's the real key. That's the real key. You know, on page 98 of the book, it says that if we put our dependency upon people, places, and things ahead of our dependency upon God, we're surely going to drink. And I love the next two-sentence paragraph in there where it says on 98. I mean, you got to read this stuff to figure it out. It says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that anyone can get well, regardless of who we are. And the second part of that sentence is where really people have a tough time. I did. The only condition is that we trust God and clean house. I didn't know what that meant. Shoot, you mean I got to trust God that I just discovered completely? Yes. I like my own will. My own will was telling me what to do all the time. I like that, those decisions, but that's what caused all the wreck and havoc. You know, I've got three beautiful daughters, and I remember the last day was perfectly described in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous on 152, in the chapter 11. It says, the loneliness was so deep, I was wishing for the end. Anybody else feel like that? Huh? The loneliness was so deep, because when you get to the bottom of where you know if something has to change, that's when you're going to really make the decision. And for me, the fear of not changing became greater than the fear to change. And that's when I crossed that bridge of reasoning over to the shoreline of faith. And Alcoholics Anonymous had their arms out, and they accepted me for who I was. They didn't tell me I had to be somebody else, somebody different, any of that other junk. They said, we'll take you as you are. And I said, wow, I thought I had this unique story. Well, everybody in here has the same damn story. You know, you drank, you caused trouble, you went to jail, you got arrested, you divorced, you remarried, divorced, lost money. You know, the one paragraph in there that really resonates in my mind really strong is on 62, that selfishness, self-centeredness. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on the toes of our fellow man and they retaliate against us. But we invariably find at some point in the past we made a decision based upon self that later put us in a position to get hurt. Anybody here have a credit card you're in debt with? Yeah, a bunch of hands. Did anybody put a gun to your head to sign the application? No, you did it. You made a selfish decision, just like drinking. Nobody put a gun to my head to take that drink. I just said, wow, I don't like the way I'm feeling. I'm going to try to drink differently. My last day of drinking was two bottles of Jack and a case of beer in 24 hours. I never had a hangover anymore. I mean, I was on the couch practicing for my future. I was just waiting for my body to catch up to my brain so we both could be buried together at the same time. I don't know, how many times can you watch Castaways thinking you're on the island all by yourself before you finally wake up? One of the things I wanted was a little soccer ball to put on my dash in my truck, you know, so I could look at that, remember? Yeah, I don't want to get on that raft. Shoot, I dropped that rock and jumped in. You know, I didn't want to do it anymore. And so anyway, it was just one of those things. And, you know, I don't mean to ramble on so much, but I hope I made some sense tonight. And to understand the fact that AA can give you a great chance to have a second life. You know, and that's what it's done for me. A life that I never knew would exist. My three daughters, I'm a grandfather now. Now I got to act more mature, I guess, and grow up. So anyway, I'm just glad to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's given me, this wonderful new life and the promises of Alka. A lot of them are coming true. So thanks for letting me share.